We are back on the record, and Mr. Gerhardsen, if you have some redirect, we're ready to go.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Chair Fedorchuk and Commissioners, Mr. Tommerdahl, why don't we, I want to cover a few topics, and I think maybe the first thing to do is just let's talk about the PTCs overall. In your testimony, you talked about the performance of the wind farms. I was wondering, do our wind farms produce more production tax credits than most wind farms?
Yes, they do.
Why is that?
You know, if you look at the table 3 on page 7, you know, our three wind farms are represented there. And this chart shows wind farms across the entire MISO footprint. And you can see that they're very high-performing facilities, and the Ashtabula and Langdon are 12 and 14 with regard to the amount of production and the capacity of these facilities. So
high capacity. More production means more production tax credits?
Exactly. Yep.
Do you get one for every megawatt hour produced?
That's correct.
When we look at the balances on Table 9 in your testimony on page 18, are those PTC balances higher because we've had, I mean, are they? Would they be lower if we had average performance?
Yes, they would be.
Now, I just want to, this is kind of one of those things that is having a higher balance a good thing or a bad thing?
The higher balance is a good thing because, in part, we have passed on a higher amount of tax credit, production tax credit, directly to the customers in the revenue requirement.
So you'd never wish to have a lower amount of production tax credits generated?
No. We're passing those through in real time.
There were related questions about accumulated deferred income tax overall. I want to ask you, is that a positive or a negative balance now? And you'll have to explain what you mean when you say positive or negative.
The accumulated deferred income taxes are a negative balance.
Explain what you mean by negative balance.
A negative balance in terms of their application or their effect on the overall rate base within the rider. So they are reducing the rate base upon which a return is calculated.
So when we think of a return as it applies to accumulated deferred income taxes, are we paying customers the return or are customers paying us the return?
We are paying customers the return.
They're getting the benefit of that return in their how it because it reduces rate base.
Correct.
Again, a good thing?
Yes.
For if you're a ratepayer. Can I ask you, there were questions about who gets the benefit of tax benefits. And for the purpose of this question, I'll say all tax benefits. So we'll include just accelerated depreciation. Maybe we could call bonus depreciation, which is a, we'll call it an extreme version. Production tax credits. Do we give, in the way we do our rates, all tax benefits to our customers?
Yes.
Can you explain that? How does that happen?
Again, when we talk about taking bonus depreciation, accumulated deferred income tax that results from that, it's a direct reduction to our rate base. That benefit is passed on directly and through, you know, reduced rates that result from that. The credits that we take reduce the tax expense, in particular the production tax credits. They reduce dollar for dollar the tax benefit costs that the customers pay in real time.
Is there any tax benefits, to your knowledge, that we're not giving to customers and retaining for investors?
No.
I want to talk about whether it's advantageous to use accelerated depreciation and bonus depreciation in particular. You, I believe, when you answered Commissioner Christman's questions about this, I think you said there's a time value of money, or you said something about the timing of the money. Does taking tax depreciation, meaning either accelerated or bonus, or always going to result in lower rates to customers?
Yes, because we incorporate the impact or the effect of that immediately into the rate base and the computation of the rates. There is an immediate pass through of that benefit in terms of a reduction in the rate base.
And if you took the rates that the customer pays over the entire life of an asset, does the benefit that you give up front get reversed in any way that's negative to the ratepayer?
I don't believe so.
I want to ask you for a little bit of a clarification on a question about incorporating the adjustments that you had agreed to with Mr. Diller into the rate. That's something that would go into effect currently, even though the rate doesn't change?
The rate doesn't change. We would make those adjustments effective May 1 of 2016, and the rate impact would ultimately roll through in the true-up in next year's or in the next annual update filing.
So the benefit of those adjustments would begin as soon as May 16th. It wouldn't be deferred.
Correct.
Until the next.
Correct.
I want to also clarify a bit about the components of costs that are in the rider, just to kind of fill out. I think there were some questions from Commissioner Fedorchuk about that. And I thought maybe what it would be helpful is if we went to Exhibit OTP2, which is the supplementary application. And could you turn to the, let's say, revised attachment 2 in that
OTP? Can you start from the beginning again? Which exhibit?
It's OTP2. Or it's the supplementary application, the one
okay.
that was filed on
February 26th?
February, yep.
And which page?
It's actually the very first page of the attachment 1.
Okay.
So it'll look, it's a spreadsheet, and it has, if you have a color copy, it has some colored lines on it.
Which attachment again?
One. Well, I'm using attachment 1.
Okay. And page?
1.
Okay.
What is first of all, what is attachment 1?
Attachment 1, this attachment 1, this would be our tracker schedule applicable to the Langdon Wind Farm. And there's about 20 pages here associated with that.
Well, and really I just want to focus on page
yep.
1.
Yep.
Can I ask you to look at column, well, I'll call is column 2, so there's the column 1 would just be the line numbers, but the descriptive text describing each line number, can you describe what those things are telling you? Not every one of them. Just
right,
is that a good place to find what components of cost are in the riders?
Yes. I mean, the net plant, you know, you got the gross plant and service, which is reflected on line 1. Your depreciation that's being taken against that plant is in line 4. The aggregate of the deferred tax items are reflected in lines 10 through 16. Line 18 or 17 then reflects what the monthly, you know, ending rate base.
I'm just going to cut you off. I don't need you to go through this line by line. I just thought, is this, if someone were looking to find what are the kinds of costs that are included in the rider calculation, would this be a good place to find it?
Yes.
Maybe I'll leave it at that. Let's just talk a little bit about, if you know, and I'm not sure if you do, do you know whether in Otter Tail's last general rate case it was considered whether to roll in the renewable rider projects into base rates or leave them in a rider? Do you know whether that was considered in that proceeding?
I believe it was. I don't know the details of all of the discussions around that or...
Do you know, and I'm because you weren't in the same job at that
Correct.
Time, and I apologize, but do you know whether customers have seen reduced rates because they were left, because the rider projects were left in the rider since that time?
I would have to look back at the revenue requirements from when the rider was initially established as compared to where they are today. I believe we would have seen some reduction. I would have to look back at all the detail. Yeah.
There were questions about, two questions, one about selling PTCs. Were you able to determine during the break whether there that has been considered? I think in your testimony you might have actually said that that hadn't been considered by Otter Tail or explored, I think, by Otter Tail.
Yeah, I wasn't aware whether it had been or not. In conferring with Mr. Borman during our break, he informed me that we had actually explored the possibility of selling PTCs, but advice from our Deloitte tax folks indicated that that was not an option to sell PTCs.
Let's talk just a little bit about syncing up the riders so that they had maybe a similar implementation date. Is there any accounting or mathematical reason that couldn't be done?
There's nothing that I'm aware of, I think, that could be a solution that we can explore further.
Are there any concerns you have that you'd want to make sure were taken into consideration if you were going to attempt to sync up the timing of those three riders?
Yeah, I think, you know, we would certainly want to look at you know, each of them has a different recovery period. You may have to adjust one rider to, you know, go out to a certain period or maybe shorten a collection period on a particular rider and try to, you know, through each mechanism get to a common date upon which they would subsequently be updated, but it's not uncommon to adjust recovery periods for in computer rate over different recovery periods to address something like that.
I'd like to ask you just about the sort of phenomenon that's occurring in this filing. I think you talked briefly about the magnitude of the AQCS project. I can't remember who asked you about that, but I'd like to just ask you to reflect on that. Why does the magnitude of the AQCS project have any impact, or why is that relevant to the discussion about what's occurring here?
Because of the, you know, that significant investment, the amount of bonus depreciation that we are allowed to take created a and is going to create a significant accumulated deferred income tax amount within our environmental cost recovery rider, which will reduce the rate base in that rider. Also, it created it and the other investments that we created or took bonus depreciation on, created the NOL position from a tax perspective that we are in for 2015.
Can you, for the record, we should say, we talked about it being a significant investment. Do you know, could you give more, an actual dollar amount?
Right. I mean, our AQCS project is coming in in roughly about a $380 million project. Otter Tail is a 53% owner of that project. So, rough numbers, you look at about $190 million of Otter Tail's share of that project. North Dakota portion of that would be about 40%, 41%.
Well, focusing on the $190 million,
yep.
the portion that's
Otter Tail's.
Has Otter Tail ever had a larger investment in any single project?
I believe this is Otter Tail's single largest project that we've been involved in.
Because of that, is it your impression that maybe would we likely see the kind of occurrence that we've seen this year with bonus depreciation? Is this a very large amount of bonus depreciation?
Yeah, it is. It is a big project. We don't do $380 million projects every day, and so.
I have nothing further at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hsu, any follow-up questions?
You said you're unable to sell the production tax credits. Was that due to, or when you said it was not an option, due to legal ability or due to business judgment?
I believe the advice we got from our tax folks, I'd have to confirm a little more, to respond to that question, but my understanding from what Corey shared with me is that we couldn't do that. I don't know the reasoning behind buying that.
Mr. Lean, any questions?
I'm a little confused. So your change in rate base then is equal to the accumulated deferred income taxes that you weren't able to take minus what Mike describes in his testimony as a regulatory asset that looks to me like is equal to those accumulated deferred income taxes. So what am I missing? It looks like they should cancel each other out. Everybody's looking at me like I'm nuts.
Get used to it, Jerry. Happens, Bill.
I have a big question mark at mine next to that part of Mike's, so you're not nuts.
Are you referring to page 13 of Mr. Diller's testimony?
It looks like I changed pages here, but I think so. Hang on.
Page 7, Jerry?
7. I lost it. Yeah, I can't find it here. There was a paragraph in Mike's testimony talking about the regulatory asset being a subtraction from the, or an addition to the rate base so that the consumers pay a return on it.
Page 7, middle of the paragraph on PTC, timing difference creates a regulatory asset that ratepayers must pay a return on.
So I guess I'm back to the question. It looks to me like the deferred income tax, they're being deferred into the future, gets subtracted from rate base.
Correct.
But we have to pay a return on the deferred income taxes that weren't able, the taxes that weren't being able to use for 2015. It looks to me like it's saying the same thing backwards. I don't know. First we put it into rate base as a deferred income tax, and then we take it out of rate base because it's a regulatory asset. Is that, do you understand the question I'm trying to ask? Maybe I'm not even.
I think so. And I think, you know, as we, I'm looking at Mr. Diller's chart on page 13, which I think visually helps to explain what's happening here. The blue bars in, and I don't know if I want to make sure everybody's at that point, but the blue bars reflect the negative or credit that's being applied to rate base as a result of our ability to take accelerated and bonus depreciation. So that's a reduction in the rate base. Now, there are other components that are currently reflected as an addition into rate base are those unused production and ITC credits that we've given the ratepayers the benefit of directly, but Otter Tail just hasn't been able to subsequently utilize on our tax returns. And so this is kind of a good visual reflection of those tax, those items of rate base that are affecting rate base due to tax types of benefits and items.
Okay, I'll keep looking at it here. Another thing I saw in your testimony was that when Ashtabula and Langdon came in, there was bonus depreciation during those years as well?
Correct.
So you weren't able to take your production tax credit totally in those years as well, so we've seen this before?
I believe it was Ashtabula and Laverne that we took the bonus depreciation on. I don't believe we were able to take bonus on the Langdon project.
Okay.
But yes, we have seen, and as has been reflected in the rider, in prior years, that benefit was factored in and incorporated in at those times.
So this isn't really new, what we're doing here. And back on, I think it was table 9 that you had in your testimony, it shows the beginning balance that went into rate base in 2009 that would have been credits that you weren't able to take in 2008.
Excuse me, which table were you looking at again?
On table 9 on page 18, we start out in 09 with a $6.6 million deferred production tax credit going into rate base. So was that booked like as a regulatory asset?
That's correct.
And the customers paid a return on that 6.6. Okay. So now we've got a $29.2 million forecasted for December of 16 in the production tax credit. Is that a deferred income tax?
It's a deferred tax asset.
Okay. And that should be subtracted from rate base?
No.
Well, the customers will have already paid this amount, right?
The customers would have already received the credit. In other words,
oh, I see, but it wasn't in their rates.
The credit that they received each year as our production tax credits, as Otter Tail earned them, say $2.9 million of production tax credits in 2015, the revenue requirement for 2015 is reduced by $2.9 million. The customers get that credit in their, you know, in the rider, and that's passed on dollar for dollar to the customers.
So they didn't pay it. They got a credit, so they didn't have to pay it.
Correct.
And the company paid it then, right? No, the company didn't pay it because they didn't have to pay taxes that year.
The company...
I'm just trying to understand.
This balance reflects, you know, we've passed through all of those credits each year to the customers, but we have certain balance left to, or that we have not yet been able to utilize on our tax returns, and that's what drives this balance, or is we haven't. We've given the customers the benefit. We haven't yet received the benefit in the form of utilizing those credits.
Okay. No further questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Stuart, for your continued support to be up here. You still have at least 2 hours to even get close to being the longest witness. So, Jerry's line of question, it kind of, in my mind anyway, reinforces my point to me anyway, that, you know, that it's almost better to have rate cases and let you guys manage your company. When you can't make it all work, you come back for rate cases, because we get into all these different things that you're best perhaps left to manage than trying to, you know, look at each of these separately, I guess. And so that's my dialogue. But anyway, so before I get to my other questions, I just had a few cleanups from the first time through. Tell me where you figure the cost of decommissioning at on these wind farms. They got to be decommissioned someday, so you should be collecting monies. We've had this discussion with MDU and Xcel, but you should be collecting monies every year, putting in a bank somewhere, and then when it comes time to decommissioning, you don't have to come back and ask for the rate, the money. So where are you collecting your decommissioning costs?
Again, this would be an item I would have to confirm, but I believe in the depreciation rate and the way the depreciation is established.
But you don't know that,
it would
sure.
take, that would take that into account in terms of what the decommissioning would be. You know, I don't know for that for sure. I would have to confirm.
So where is your decommissioning? So, well, if you don't know, I think we need to.
Yeah,
We need to get either from something late filed or something later to clean up, just to, because it's a cost that we need to include in these wind farms, and I don't, and it's not. And I think that we can debate about what that cost should be, mm-hmm. but there should be a line somewhere what you think the cost will be to decommission, and we can debate about that. But okay, so we'll maybe clean that up as this goes on. I'm still a little bit maybe confused is a good word. I'm still trying to fully understand the cost of what it takes to run these wind farms. And I do appreciate the dialogue a little bit with your attorney about the cost. But if we go back to that page 1 of 20 of Attachment 1, you know, it starts out of a plant balance of $65 million, and then it jumps to $74 million, and it goes up and down. What is that exactly? What is that compiled of?
That would be just the cost of buying the turbines, getting them installed, getting the equipment, the actual facility cost.
What has it changed to, like $3 million in the life from 1 year till the? Is that just more additions on? And so we should. Where is the stabilized cost of the plant value of Langdon? At some point, it should become a stabilized cost, right?
For the most part, there may be.
Until you get to maintenance.
There might be a gearbox or something that you have to replace, and, you know, we would have to account for that as a capital item as opposed to.
But where do I find out what it takes you to run the Langdon Wind Farm every year?
If you go down to the expenses category, you start seeing some operating costs, O&M, depreciation.
So give me a number. What it costs to run Langdon Wind Farm in a year?
If I'm looking here on lines 27, 28, and 29, I mean, the O&M, the operating cost line would be on line 27. That was about $629,000. You got some lease payments, ground lease payments factored in here. There's property taxes. And then your book depreciation is factored in there.
Okay, so when we had the previous rate case, your attorney asked you the question about, you know, did we consider putting it in the rider into the rate base? And we did, but we didn't think it was a good idea because the wind farm was so new. But now here we are, not 10 years into it, but soon 10 years into it. What costs are fluctuating so much now that you can't put it into base rates? I mean, it's built. We've got the production tax credits going to drop off. Why shouldn't we roll something like that into rates? What is changing now from year to year that would cause a problem with that? You know what it costs to build it. You know what it costs to run it. Mm-hmm. Why don't we put it into rates?
I mean, I think, you know, at whenever we would, whenever our next rate case may be, you know, that would maybe be a consideration.
We just had a case with MDU where we said we directed them to come back for a rate case because of this similar issue. It was on a generation rider, but so tell me why it's not time to put this into base rates. Tell me what I'm missing, why we shouldn't put it into base rates now.
I guess, you know, we've got a couple more years of production tax credits that we're still going to be utilizing and passing through to customers. They're going to get a dollar-for-dollar reduction.
That would still happen if it was in base rates. I mean, that you'd get it. You'd work it out internally, but that would still happen, whether it was in base rates or the rider. Okay, fair enough. Well, but I mean, that's okay. Tell me on the, and I may have been just wrong on this, but the when you sell the wind. Okay, when you MISO has it set up, and not just MISO, where wind is a must-take resource. So every day you bid it into the market, and if you need it, you can take it back. If you don't, somebody buys it. Where does the revenue from the electricity sales go into your books, if you will?
That would all roll through the fuel clause.
All of it, yes. Right? Yeah. So but what if you make money on it? If you're making money on it because you don't need it, but you're selling it into MISO because somebody else needs it, it just doesn't make sense that it goes to the fuel clause because you're not using it. You're making money off of it. Where does that
Well, that all rolls through the fuel clause. Even if there's asset-based margin, you know, excess sales still get rolled through.
I might need to understand that better then. Okay, so that would defer the cost of fuel going forward for some assets. So there's no way that would show up as a...
Not in...
Okay, I guess I'd forgot about that. I knew that for the using, but I didn't realize going forward. Jerry, if that's wrong, let me know, okay? All righty. Are you anticipating adding any major generation in the future? I guess you could define any generation in the future. I've been following your guys' stuff. I don't know of any, but am I missing something?
Our resource planning folks are always looking at what we're going to need into the future.
But with unless there's some anticipated, or not anticipated, accelerated retirement to some of your base load, you're probably sitting pretty good for the next while. Is my read.
Our Hoot Lake plant will be coming offline in 2021.
And we've been planning for that, though?
Correct.
Okay. So once again, are you anticipating any new wind farms coming on?
Again, they're looking at different options, considering potentially wind farm, potentially PPA. There's been no decision as to what's the most prudent and cost-effective.
Once again, back to my point, though, you're not anticipating building anything new for wind farms right now that would would cause a reason not to put these wind farms into base rates.
We don't have anything on the
in the hopper right now. Excuse me. Okay. Let's see here. This sheet that I looked at, it's very helpful. What I noticed that there's a talk in there about Minnesota cap structure with something ROE per order. Then later on down it talks about North Dakota's federal or North Dakota's ITC. This looks like a sheet that has a mixture of some Minnesota stuff and some North Dakota stuff. And we had discussion before about making sure the North Dakota tax credits go to North Dakota customers. Is this the same sheet used for everybody?
Excuse me, Commissioner Cock, for the record, could you identify the sheet that you're looking at?
Oh, yes, ma'am. This would be attachment one of, exhibit two for the company? Is that right? Pages one and two is kind of what I'm thumbing through right now. Thank you, Your Honor.
I believe that is just a labeling error where it says Minnesota, if you're looking at page two on the top there on line one. I think that's just a labeling error in the spreadsheet.
So there's a separate one of these for the South Dakota Commission and a separate one?
There's separate. We don't have a renewable rider in Minnesota or anything in there.
Why don't you have it in Minnesota? How do they do it in Minnesota for this?
Those were included in our last rate case. So we have these investments are in our last rate case.
So just, I know it's their jurisdiction, but how are you dealing with these bonus tax credits in that case? In Minnesota jurisdiction, how are you applying those?
I believe they are. I mean, they were factored into our.
But you didn't know until December of this last year that they were going to show up.
I'm sorry. Maybe I misheard your question.
Maybe I didn't state it clearly. But part of the reason we're here, I think, is because the bonus tax credits were approved. Oh. So you filed, made your changes. Doesn't that same thing apply in Minnesota now?
Correct.
So how are you going to put that into
the bonus depreciation was incorporated into our. Rate case, and we factored in.
Okay, but the rate case, this bonus was just approved in December of last year, right? The bonus depreciation?
Correct.
So how could you have factored in a previous rate case there?
Oh, not in a previous rate case, no.
Okay, but the revenues that are coming from this, when you've got a situation where you have it in rates, are you still able to walk it back to the customers?
I guess I'm still not. Maybe you could try rephrasing the question.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I'm just. It's Minnesota's jurisdiction, but I think my point was that they've got their. This is in rates for their. There'll be a way to figure it out over in Minnesota. Okay. The next one, if I could, Your Honor, make sure I do this right. Could I take official notice of case number PU16148? Which is the environmental cost recovery rider filed by Otter Tail in front of this commission?
Yes, North Dakota Administrative Rule 6902.0508 allows the commission to take notice of any fact in its records and files to which reference is made on the record at the hearing. So, yes, you may.
So can they object to that if they want?
You can. Any objections?
No objection.
Thank you. Mr. Hsu.
None, Your Honor.
Official notice is taken. Thank you, Your Honor. Commissioner.
Okay. And Stuart, I'm not trying to play gotcha here. I just want to make sure I fully understand it, okay? And I believe my colleagues have a copy of it as well. As I dropped it off on your desk here on the break somewhere.
What did you label it?
Right there.
Oh, this is March of 2016?
Yep. That's the one.
Oh, the renewable or the environmental.
The environmental rider. Okay, so I'm going to step back just a little bit to. Okay, so Otter Tail filed with us the first case that basically that said, and we put in our notice, the proposed change would increase the cost of electricity about $1.08 a month for the average customer, and then based on the tax credits coming through at the federal level, you refiled, and basically now it goes up to $3 for the average customer, $3.03, correct? That's the two changes. And so I was doing some ciphering here on break, which is always dangerous, right? But basically, that's a $1.95 increase from what was initially filed. And my understanding so far in this case has been that majority of that is because you're going to need to increase costs through the rider because of offsets you'll have in the environmental cost recovery rider that's in front of us. In general terms, is that the way I should understand how that happened? Okay, so then during the break, I'm jumping over to PU16148 now. Explain to me why. Okay, so that's an increase of $1.95. So initially, I guess I would assume that the $1.08 increase that you asked for was just the cost of the increased cost of what it would take to run those wind farms. It had nothing to do with taxes and bonus tax depreciation. Just what you thought was a fair increased, not a fair, was the amount that you needed to balance the books.
Correct. Again, the current rate that was in effect was, I'd say artificially low because of that significant true up. And so that.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, then. So then if I go to the actual filing of 16148, page number 12, and you do reference the same exact table in page 10 of the filing, which is the one that you've talked about in this case, so those numbers make sense. But I'm just trying to understand number 7, rate impact. Okay, it talks about the rate impact. The second paragraph, it talks about the average residential customer will see approximately $1.19 decrease. So why, if we're trying to make the argument to the customer, that explain to the customer that while you're going to have an increase of $1.95 in your wind rider, you're only going to get a decrease of $1.19 in your environmental rider. Why are those numbers different?
There's different recovery periods that we're looking at here in terms of
that's a good point.
Of, what's being accounted for in determination of the rate, in addition to where are the collections and those kinds of things. But I think it's a timing. There is some timing aspect at play here.
Okay, how can you prove that to me or show me some numbers that that show that.
Well, this
and I'm not assuming that's a rate that's going to be agreed upon. I'm just using that for sake of discussion. So talk to me the difference in timing of periods. Show me or walk me
this,
through that.
Well, this rate would be calculated.
When you say this, which one are you talking about?
I'm sorry, in the environmental rider.
Okay.
This rate would be for a collection period from July of 2016 through June of 2017.
Okay.
And that's right below the table listed there on page 12.
And then the previous case, the current case, I guess, the period on that one we've talked about before, but can you say
yeah,
it again?
That's an April, calculated on an April of 2016 through March of 2017 time frame.
Okay. So basically we're talking about a two-month difference in the timing. So that's, what, 1/6 difference, if you will? That cost difference seems like it's about a third. It's about a third difference, give or take. So, but you're confident that that's the biggest reason why is just the timing? Or is there something else that we're missing while those numbers are offset?
I'd have to get reorientated back to the details here, but
okay. If that's the argument, I think that's something you guys should flush out a little better, that shows those numbers that are being computed for the environmental rider are exactly the numbers that match what you're casing for the other one. So, all right. I don't think – let me look at my notes here again. Okay, I think that was it. Thank you, Stuart.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, yes.
Okay, now I'm even more confused after Commissioner Cox. Your testimony isn't that these numbers are going to wash out to exactly the same and be zero between the two riders. It's not that they're going to be exactly like – the increase in the renewable rider is going to exactly equal the decrease in the environmental rider. You're not suggesting that. What I heard you guys say, and just tell you this is yes or no, that when all is said and done, I don't know what the time period is on this, but when all is said and done, the increases that these customers pay for the renewable rider will be offset, and they will pay. It will be a net decrease between the transmission and the environmental rider. The renewable will go up, transmission and environmental will go down, and that will be more than the renewable goes up. Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I need. And so, what Commissioner Kulk is trying to tally up right now between what you filed as a decrease in the environmental rider as $1.19 per month and an increase in the renewable rider of $3.03 per month, first of all, doesn't take into consideration the transmission rider, which also has to be calculated an offset, and also maybe doesn't cover the entire time period where this difference is going to be.
Correct. The time periods are different. The illustration on table 11 is presented to reflect common time periods across all.
Okay.
And then the incremental impact to the revenue requirement within each of those riders.
So by the end of 2016 in table 11, customers will have paid, they will have seen a net decrease of about $430,000.
The revenue requirements upon which rates are calculated, if we have these time periods accounted for in all three riders, this would be the impact across all three riders, a $435,000 reduction in the aggregate revenue requirement.
Okay. For so what's wrong with saying that? Year, how
for those calendar year time periods.
Okay. But that doesn't make sense to me. What's wrong with just saying that they will pay $430,000 less? What am I missing?
Over time, that is a correct statement.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Then back to Jerry's. Oh, there's a whole bunch of fifth graders from one of our schools. Hi, guys. They're here getting a tour of the Capitol and learning about government, but we didn't figure they'd want to sit through this hearing. Okay, so back to what Jerry was asking about. And your table, let's see here, not this one, your original filing and the table that you guys direct us to, the spreadsheet, which makes me celebrate a little bit because I don't need cheaters to read it yet. Oh, and it makes me thankful I'm not an accountant also. So ADIT is reduced from rate base, right? Accumulated deferred income taxes are reduced from rate base.
Correct.
Okay, so then in that December 8th column on that revised attachment 1, page 1 of 20, in their February 26th filing, looking at that final column there, December 8th, on the rate base section, you've got the accumulated deferred taxes. That's a negative. Then there's two zeros, and then there's a positive there, $10 million for the federal. Let's see, which one is that on? Federal PTC.
I believe it's the North Dakota ITC.
Okay, North Dakota ITC.
Correct.
It is?
There.
Okay, so why is it a positive if ADITs are always a negative
it's,
number?
If you look two more lines down, you will also see a second line that's a North Dakota ITC, which is a negative amount. It's the way this tracker was set up to handle the amortization of the ITC over the life. Those two, in effect, net each other out. So the impact is
negative overall because there's $1 million bucks difference about between those two, right? A negative $1 million. In calc math.
Yeah, I'm looking. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Okay. So, so all of these are taken off of rate, reduce the rate base. Which reduces rates for customers.
Correct.
Then why are they, and where in these millions of different lines is this regulatory asset of the PTC calculated and added back in for customers to pay pay earnings on?
The PTCs. And we have to make sure we're looking at the right line here. I might refer you to page 4, 3 and 4. Let's move to 2009, I think, because we've got the facility in service here.
Okay.
On page, if you go down to page 4 of 20,
okay,
You'll see lines 10. Line 10 is the federal PTC rate.
Okay.
21. In this particular year, in this instance, it was $21.
Yep. Then the output.
And then the output. And so that calculated to about $3.3 million, $3.323 million of production tax credit.
Yep.
For 2009. Now, if you go up to page 3,
mm-hmm.
and you look at line 45, federal PTC, you'll see $3,323,000
yep.
of PTC as a credit.
Yep.
And this is a credit into the tax portion of the entire expense section of the revenue requirement calculation. At the bottom, line 52 is the sum of all of the expenses that are included in the revenue requirement calculation mm-hmm. for 2009. You'll see the return on the rate base of the $5.3 million. The total revenue requirement is $5.7 million, the sum of the expense recovery that yep. we're getting and the return on the rate base,
right.
which the rate base amount is reflected up on the upper part of that schedule.
Okay, I get all that, but I still don't see this regulatory asset that is added back in and customers are paying. Everything is okay. subtracted
if you,
here.
If you look up on line 12,
okay,
on page 3, you'll see federal PTC.
Yep.
There's an asset accumulating there.
No, it's 12, I think.
It's 12. Line 10 is the accumulated deferred income taxes. Line 12 is the PTC balance.
Okay, which is a positive up there. But it's wouldn't it just be canceled out then by the negative over on the expense side? So zero?
What's happening is the expense credit is a dollar for dollar pass through to the customers. So it's reducing the revenue requirement by $3.3 million.
Okay.
The $3.2 million included in rate base, there's a return.
It's added back up, added
right.
to the rate it's, base, and then you pay a return on that. Okay.
Correct.
All right. I actually understand that now. Okay. Jerry, do you? Were you following all that? Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I can explain it to you later, Jerry. okay. Let's see. I don't think I have any other questions. Thank you, Stuart. Sorry to put you through that, but the light bulb went off.
No
so.
Problem.
Commissioner Christman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to be clear, I talked to you about the PTCs earlier, and they last for, you get them for 10 years, but you can hold them for 20 years. And even though this chart on table 9 kind of just keeps accumulating them like they're a completely fungible asset, they're really not, because once you get to the 20th year, you'd start to distinguish and always want to make sure your ones that were 20 years old were used as opposed to ones that were only less than 20 years old.
My understanding is they're treated in kind of a first-in, first-out
okay.
FIFO-type okay. treatment.
So the last ones in your 10th year, you still have 20 years to use those. But the first ones that you accumulated, you only have 20 years from the year you got them to begin using them. Okay. And then on that table, You said earlier that the positive balances are a good thing, right?
The positive balances reflect tax benefits that have been passed through to the customers in the form of a reduction in revenue requirement.
I thought,
but the balance reflects those that have yet to be applied or used on our tax returns.
So it's a good thing because it's an asset that will be used to lower rates for future years.
When these get used, the deferred tax asset balance will reduce. That will have a reducing effect on the rates.
Okay. Yes. And then what's an example of an old asset that you're still depreciating? Just for conversation purposes.
Our Hoot Lake plant is...
Okay, Hoot Lake's still being depreciated? Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
So are the positive balances on that depreciation schedule also a good thing for the same reasons? That's a good thing that you have that depreciation built up there yet, because this year and however long you still have depreciation, it's lowering the rate base, correct?
On that specific asset, yes. The net undepreciated balance or the net balance in service is constantly declining, yes.
When Hoot Lake was built, or when the improvements were added that you're still depreciating, had there been bonus depreciation available and you had used it all then, you would have lowered rates back then, but now the rates would be higher, correct?
I believe from a book perspective, the rates wouldn't have changed. It's just a matter of when the taxes get paid. And because the deferral of the taxes was pushed into the future, you know, the benefits that were realized, you know, up front in this example would have reduced the rates.
So had it been bonus depreciated immediately, we wouldn't have this depreciation to lower your taxes right now, and so the rates would be higher right now. Correct?
Can you rephrase that again? I mean, you repeat the question, I'm sorry.
So Hoot Lake, we're yep. still depreciating it,
yes.
And by using that depreciation right now, it is lowering your tax burden and thus lowering the rates, correct? Lowering the rates that you have to pass on to your customers.
Correct.
And had you used all that depreciation years ago in a bonus depreciation scenario, you would have lowered your taxes due back then even further. So taxes would have been lower for those customers, but now for current customers, they would be higher because you wouldn't have this depreciation anymore.
Our tax payments would have been lower. Now we are paying those taxes. The traditional rate making would suggest that the rates that we have been charging and the income tax portion, the expense portion of those rates over the life wouldn't have changed. In the expense portion of the revenue requirement calculation for that asset. So, you know, a 39% tax rate, that expense would be incorporated into the rates. The question is whether, a part of that tax expense is a current expense that actually gets paid. The other part of the expense is a deferred expense, and the deferred piece is what,
okay,
you know, rolls into the rate base.
And then is there, you use 39%. Is that the highest corporate tax income tax rate right now?
I think I used it as a representative.
Let's just use that then for the sake of this question. So by doing the bonus depreciation now, on $1 million of income, you use more of the depreciation off of Big Stone up front, and so on that $1 million, you lower it and you save $390,000. If, as some realistic potential presidential contenders talk about raising corporate income tax rates significantly, if that happens a few years down the line, if taxes are much more than 39%, will we not kind of wish we had saved that depreciation and taken it off of income that's being taxed at 50 or 60% instead of taking it off now on income that's taxed at 39%?
It's always a good thing. I believe it's always a good thing when we can take the depreciation up front and take advantage of it when we can get it. Ratepayers benefit through a reduced investment upon which the rates are determined, the rates are calculated.
I tend to think that you're right. I tend to agree with you on that, but I don't have enough knowledge to be very confident in myself. But it does cause me to feel that now I need some kind of further analysis beyond just that we decided it wouldn't be a wise thing to sell the production tax credits. I need some analysis of why that's not a wise thing, because it's really for the same reasons. You know, by selling them, if there's some price available, then it would benefit now as opposed to waiting. And so,
I mean, if it's legal to sell them?
If it's legal to sell them and there's a market available. So I guess I'd like a further analysis of, you said later that you had, that it had been contemplated and decided against doing it, correct?
My understanding was, yeah, we couldn't sell them production tax credits.
Because it's illegal or there's no market, or because it was unwise?
I don't know the well, that's I, the like piece that I can confirm
I,
with.
I need to get that information.
That
please.
Was...
Yep. That's all the questions I have. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission?
Just a follow-up to some of Commissioner Crispin's. On the sale of the production tax credits, I know that companies have gone through lots of different machinations to structure themselves so they can be used. And so I do not believe it's an option to sell them, because we've seen a lot of different, you know, where some they own them for a while so they can use the tax credits, and then they sell them at a later date to a utility. Utilities sometimes don't own them, or the RECs don't own them. That's why they always, because they can't use the production tax credits. That's why I always do power purchase agreements, because they don't have, they don't pay taxes, so they don't use the PTCs. So they can confirm this, but I believe that is not an option. It's not legal. So I meant to mention that last time. On Commissioner Crispin's depreciation questions, which are really interesting and good, let me offer you a very simplified analysis of how I understand it, and you can tell me if I'm totally wrong. So if I can relate it to owning a house, so I get the interest, I get to have that interest expense that I'm paying, you know, you get some credit on your taxes for interest. Mm-hmm. So I recently paid off a house that I bought when I was young. It was a 15-year loan, paid it off. Now I don't get that expense anymore, but it's all paid off. So is your point that because it's not in, you're reducing the rate base, you're not, so like in the Hoot Lake plant, it made, if you were to have that bonus depreciation early on, you would be paying for that sooner. So then maybe you don't get to take any of the tax benefits later, but you also aren't paying for that plant anymore. It's already, so customers aren't being charged for it, for the actual cost of the investment. It's paid. And so it's been reduced from rate base. And so you don't get any more income tax credit on it because it's already, you don't have an expense. Is that what you mean when you're saying you're taking it off a rate base sooner?
When we, you know, in this example, when you would invest in an asset, a Hoot Lake plant, and we would take, you know, the book depreciation on our books, we would calculate, and there's the tax depreciation. That differential between those two, let's assume hypothetically that the bonus depreciation or some accelerated method of depreciation is in effect. The difference, the timing difference of when between the accelerated depreciation that the company is able to utilize on its tax return as opposed to the actual expense that we record in our books. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the delta up front that creates the accumulated deferred income tax amount, the credit. Mm-hmm. That credit, because we're not paying that money, that the rate base is reduced by that credit, so the customers don't pay, you know, they get the benefit. You often maybe hear it as a you know, a tax-free loan to the company for that, or an interest-free loan to the company because it's taxes that have been booked but haven't been paid. And so we, and this is the, you know, the rate-making mechanism and the treatment of this. always reduce, you know, that ADIT amount always reduces the rate base.
So it is extra depreciation.
Correct. It's over and above what is on the books or your book depreciation.
If you didn't do that, you just wouldn't get to add that. You wouldn't have that delta, and you wouldn't get to subtract that from your rate base.
Correct. If you book and tax depreciation,
you'd just be out that money. Like you, that would be that that delta wouldn't be reduced from the rate base, and so customers wouldn't see that benefit. Right? If you chose not to do the bonus depreciation.
Correct. You would, if, maybe another way to explain is if tax and book depreciation were exactly the same.
Yeah, which under what Commissioner Christmas is, you would, is you suggesting would be more favorable.
You would have no adjustment to rate base other than the normal depreciation of the asset, the book depreciation, excuse me, so because of the tax depreciation is higher, there's that accelerated depreciation, which results, you know, in us being able, you know, the utility being able to take a bigger deduction on the tax return than what was
originally,
you know,
planned.
Yeah, or what, you know, what you know, you're recording on your books, that's the delta that creates the accumulated deferred amount. And so we give the ratepayers the benefit of the fact that we haven't had to pay those taxes, even though we've in a sense collected them. So it reduces the rate base.
Okay. I get it, I think.
I think, Commissioner Kock, you had another question?
Just two quick ones, Stuart. I wanted to, my colleague's simple yes or no question, I wanted a caveat to make sure that I restated what we talked about. You're talking about only the transmission rider costs that are, as they relate to bonus depreciation, not future transmission costs, because we will see a transmission increase in our rider that is not reflected in these numbers, as I believe what you told me before.
Correct.
So we cannot make the we cannot just say it's as simple as, unless we give it that long caveat in there, right?
Correct.
Okay, just to clarify that. And the last question is one that would you let me read my notes here, make sure. Would you have any objections to merging this current case with PU 16148 if I believe that there are similar issues at play?
I think we could do that. I mean,
I'm just thinking out loud here that maybe perhaps, and I have talked to my colleagues, obviously, but we maybe do an informal on that case. We notice this because these two issues are, I think these two are tied just like that. It's very hard for me to make a decision on this case without making a decision on the other case. So I just wanted to get your thought back on that. So thank you.
Commissioner Christman.
I thought I was clear on something until the recent answers, but just to be clear, bonus depreciation doesn't give you more depreciation in the long run. It just gives you more now, less later.
Correct.
But over the years, they balance out.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
And I think a lot of this revolves back to, if I understood it right, one of Mr. Hsu's questions way back hours ago. And I'm looking for more than a yes or no answer. This is a kind of a theory answer that I'm wondering what your or the company's thoughts are on it. With regard to these production tax credits, I kind of like the idea of you maximizing your tax situation and doing the bonus depreciation and saving these a little bit if we're talking about saving them for a couple years and kind of leveling things out. But if we're talking about saving this, some of the most recent credits, until the mid-2030s, when some of your customers will be benefiting from them that aren't even born yet today, and sadly, a fair percentage of your customers who are paying for this renewable rider now won't even be living anymore then, or won't be your customers anymore, that seems too long. And so how long do we put these things off, the benefits from them? I'm not sure what the right answer is, because I really seek stability, and of course the longer you put it off, the more you can stabilize, but somewhat balance. It doesn't seem like it should be 20 or 30 years either. Well, it wouldn't be 30, but 20 years either.
I think to clarify, the credits can be carried over that long, so they don't lose a value. We will use the credits as soon as possible. There's, we are not intending to not utilize credits, and keep rate base higher than, that's, when these credits are, when we get to a point where we can apply them against taxable income, we will be using them to the maximum. And we'll see the reduction in those balances.
Okay, no other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gerritsen, any redirect that you'd like to do?
Just want to clarify a couple of things, I think, in a real general sense. Number one is I want to talk about using IRS, what we'll call tax benefits like accelerated depreciation. Is it ordinary business practice to use those benefits in business, all businesses?
Yes.
Would it be somewhat unusual not to use them?
I would think so, yes.
Now about in rate making, your calculation of accumulated deferred income tax, the use of tax assets to represent the situation currently, is that ordinary rate making principles at work?
Yes.
Have you done anything that strays from ordinary rate making principles for accounting for accumulated deferred income tax?
No.
That's all I have.
Very good. I want to make sure that we've provided an opportunity for everybody to ask questions. So are there any further questions, Mr. Hsu?
No, Your Honor. I think I'll leave with that.
Okay. Mr. Lean?
Yes, Your Honor. I just had one thing here. This was to go into effect 1st of April, right, this new rate?
The initial filing contemplated an April 1st rate. The supplemental filing moved it back to May 1st, and that's when it was calculated.
Okay. So if we go beyond that date, we will be running up a balance in the balancing account and have a higher rate next time.
Correct.
And that, because of the size of the increase, that would go up pretty quickly. So the idea of combining this case and the other rider would end up costing more money next time. Okay. Just wanted to point that out. No further questions.
Thank you. Anything further from the commission? Nope. Hearing none. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Regina.
What are the commission's wishes with regard to a lunch or a break?
I think that we'd like to take a half an hour for lunch, if that's possible.
Okay. Does that work for you?
Do you have
counsel?
Flexibility.
All right. So if we come back at about 1:05 or so?
Perfect.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.